Hi everyone, welcome back. I think we're ready to get going now. I'd like you to join me in welcoming David Zoyten, who's going to be talking today about HAL and DBUS and all that magic stuff that just makes things work when you plug it in. So, over to you, David.
Yeah, thanks. Wow, all you guys went to the Google party, it looks like. Okay, so I'm here to talk about gluing a desktop and a kernel together. It's kind of an abstract topic, and I'll go with like just explaining how most Linux distributions work today, and then talk a bit more about some future-looking, forward-looking stuff. So basically, all these words, kernel, desktop, it has really different meanings to different people. There's like all the home users, there's the corporate sector, and a lot of analysts like to write articles about all this. So I'm going to approach it like with what does it mean for a home user that his computer actually works. So in the kernel, there's a lot of different kernels. The most prevalent one is Linux, but there's Sun with Solaris, FreeBSD. And desktop, I mean, we have a huge selection of desktops. So for most people, it means things like KDE, GNOME, XFCE, E17. But also, last few years, we started to see MAMO, OLPC, with its XO user interface. So all this really means there's a lot of different things you can glue together in different ways. And how do we do that? There's been a lot of work with DBUS and HAL Network Manager over the past few years. It's mostly driven by desktop developers, more so than kernel developers. It mostly takes place in free desktop, so it's all desktop agnostic. And it's actually a good collaboration zone. There's a lot of GNOME people, a lot of KDE people, and also a few kernel people. So I'm going to just show some examples of what a normal Linux desktop will do today. So if you plug in a camera, you get like an annoying dialogue, some people think at least. So the question was, how do you get that to start? You plug in a camera and...
No,
stop. Oh, that's a gconf key. So, most people expect this dialogue to come up. Most people is not including Keith, I think. So yeah, I mean, you can compare it with like the good old days. So you plug in your camera, you open up a shell, or maybe you press an icon. And, I mean, you need to put in things like slash media, slash ES digital, depending on what camera it is. Other things are like power management. So this is GNOME Power Manager. It also like puts up annoying dialogues if like some of your devices are running out of power. But it's kind of useful. You can just use the UI to configure it. And what did we used to do? We used to like edit some file. I mean, you even needed like this strange thing called the root account. I mean, super user privileges. I mean, that's a different password you have to put in. So, I mean, so it's also useful eye candy. It's taking up a lot of CPUs to draw graphs. This on a laptop I just started using. It's actually pretty amazing. It draws 20 watts. And it's nice to like, you can see how good or bad your battery is. Back in the day, you can still do that, of course. I mean, you can grab all your files, write a script. That's still available. We get icons when you plug in stuff that looks like your device. So it's easy to make a distinction between your two different devices. This, of course, a restriction of the FAT file system. The file system label can only be like 13 characters, so it cut off my name. Suckers. I mean, back in the day, how did you do that? You were like mount dev SDA, SLSDB, and like, so that's a bit easier today. You can even do like specify mount options for your different devices through the UI without having to be super user. I mean, back in the day, you had to edit your FS tab. You had to know that that damn super user password. I'm surprised no one really called bullshit on this dialogue, because it's really, really bad. Okay, Chris was being quiet. This is actually really, really crackful. I have to admit that I wrote the code for this. Maybe someone should have their money back. I mean, it also shows to a degree that, I mean, the kernel you have to deal with, the base system, Linux, is, I mean, there's options all over the map. So this is a standard, like, FAT16 storage device. So you can actually, you have a choice of two or three drivers, at least, for driving the file system. So I want to use a MS-DOS driver instead of the FAT driver. I mean, it's just difficult to put good UI to things like this. So why did I do it? Why didn't I just say, no, people don't need to use that? Well, a lot of people flamed me on a mailing list. I don't know, I live in an English-speaking country, grew up in Western Europe, so dealing with different code pages, IO chassis, I mean, that's a reality other places, so it's really hidden. It's difficult to find this dialogue, so that's my excuse. And it's fixable, for some degree of fixable. You could have checkboxes, at least remove all the text entry boxes. So it's not really good UI. So we also support like encrypted storage device. You plug in a device, it's all encrypted. You want to keep all your data secret. For some reason, either because you think it's cool, or maybe because you work with like sensitive information and your boss tells you to do it. So when you plug in a device like that, you get a dialogue into your password. You can even save the password in the key ring. So the next time you plug it in, it will actually auto-mount. It sounds kind of contradictory, but it's not. I mean, the key ring is also protected. I mean, back in the day, you had to do stuff like this. You had to become super user, and then, I mean, you can still do all this, of course. So this network manager allows you to connect to networks. I mean, this is alternative. A lot of people still do this because network manager don't work for them. It's actually not always network manager that's broken. It's, to a large degree, a lot of broken kernel drivers. But I'm sure Dave Jones and others will like talk about that. And we even put stuff in like connecting to VPN connections. So if your employer has a VPN connectivity software they want you to use to encrypt all the secret data, we can set up that. It's plugin based, so I think right now Network Manager supports PTP, OpenVPN, and VPNC. I mean, it's nothing new, it's just a UI shell on top of doing stuff like this back in the day where you also needed to have the super user password. I hate the root password. So how does all this work? I mean, I'm going to talk a bit about that. There's going to be some scary diagrams, so you have to bear with me for a while. So basically, on most systems, there's a Linux kernel, there's a thing called UDEV, HAL, Dbus, and you have a desktop session where all these shiny dialogues live in. So basically, the kernel discovers the device and has some internal state. It represents it in SysFS. You can go into SysFS, it's just a file system that represents kernel and internals. So UDEV is a daemon that runs in user space. It receives the event and looks like this. It's basically SysFS path, and there's a sequence number because it keeps emitting events, and a lot of other good stuff. And an action to say, I'm adding this device, it can be I'm removing this device. So that's the way it works. UDEV receives the hot plug event. Does anyone remember Espin hot plug? It was totally awesome. I remember when I started doing the HAL bits, like 2 or 3 years ago. Then, for some reason, I bought a lot of USB devices. So I had this like USB hub with two other hubs attached and like 8 different USB devices. So I plugged that in. Then the disk keeps spinning for like a minute and a half. So basically back in the day, what happened was that the kernel, every time it saw a new device, it forked a new process called Espin Hotplug. That itself was a shell script, so it loads like bash, and then it starts like running a lot of shell scripts in a directory. So for every hotplug event you get, it started something like at least 20 processes. So you have like 100 hotplug events times 20 processes. That's like 2,000 processes like at once. So it took a minute and a half or something. Today we can do it in a few seconds because it's all event-based. If you configure your system correctly, because, I mean, UDEV allows you to run programs. You can see here. So UDEV basically takes the event and it creates the device node, so you can give it a name. You can run programs to like, what should I name this device? So if you like plug in a mouse, then you will get the name /dev input something event 42. Or you could call it like /dev input my wireless Bluetooth mouse, if you're into that. So basically UDEV runs a lot of programs and also passes the event off to HAL through just a standard Unix circuit. So HAL like receives the event from UDEV. It looks more at the device and like what kind of device is this. If it's a like storage device, it tries to find out the file system. And then it merges information based on other aspects of the device and uses XML for that, because XML is what people like to use. This didn't really come out well. This is actually a piece of XML. So I tried to highlight the important stuff. So if I plug in a Compact Flash reader, then I really want a Compact Flash icon on the desktop. So I somehow need to know that this device is an iPod, this is a Compact Flash reader. So we can match on, it's a USB device, we can match on the vendor identifier and the product identifier. And then we can merge a property saying this is Compact Flash, or this is MMC, or this is an iPod. And that's useful in the desktop, so we can draw the right icon and basically do the right thing, depending on the device. So HAL basically is a daemon that exports a set of device objects. So it has its own representation of the different devices attached to the system. Each device object is basically very simple. It has properties, which are basically key value pairs, saying this is a Compact Flash reader, this is the device, this is all other aspects of it. And applications can call into HAL and like investigate the devices or do other things. Or even like if it's a storage device, you can call into HAL and say mount the storage device here or there with these options. So there's a simple API for accessing HAL. So one of the first things I did was to write this HAL device manager, which is a very bad name because it doesn't really manage anything. It just shows you the different device updates. So we can see this is on my laptop. So I'm looking at the block device, basically the volume for my swap partition. So there's a lot of interesting things. Is this volume a partition from a disk? What's the label? What's the FS type? It's what's the usage of the device? So all this information is basically in HAL. And HAL knows all this information because it runs a lot of programs and collects it, merges information from XML files. So it's kind of a one-stop shop to get information. HAL is really a bad name, so it's hardware abstraction layer, and it's not. It's really not that. It's more a device index, but I get to blame Havok Pennington. He wrote some article that I read, and then I started writing code. And here I am. So if you don't have stuff like HAL, you can, of course, grab around in /sys. You can like run utilities to like find out what kind of file system is on some device. And that pretty much also requires super user privileges if you want to know anything interesting. I mean, /sys in Linux is a huge improvement over twofold, where the information was in so many different places and you have to do all kind of tricks to learn about what devices you have. So HAL gets the device and it investigates it, exports it over DBus. And DBus is, as most people probably know, but it's an IPC system that allows applications to talk to each other. Much like CorBear, a bit like XML RPC, but it's limited to one system. It's not networked at all. So it runs in different modes. There's two different buses that DBus supports. One is the session-wide bus. It basically allows applications in your desktop session to talk to each other. So if I'm a media player, I can tell the screensaver to don't start the screensaver because the user is watching a movie. So it kind of enables applications to talk to each other. The way we use it with HAL and all the Project Utopia bits is the system bus that basically allows unprivileged desktop applications to talk to like system mechanisms like HAL and Network Manager. So this is a diagram basically explaining what I just said. So you have your desktop apps talk through DBus to HAL, and HAL passes information on from the kernel to the applications and back and forth. Lots of errors. So basically, the last bit after HAL got the hot plug event says, here's a device. You have something running in your desktop session that basically receives the events from HAL and it looks, oh, there's a new storage device, what should I do? And that's really a user preference. So it enforces the user's preferences by invoking methods in HAL for like mounting the device, connecting to a wireless network when in range, and also updates the desktop and draw all these icons. That's a really scary diagram. I'm sorry. So this is kind of an example, like just revisiting all I just said. Plugging that device, oh, it's like encrypted files. It's an encrypted block device. So HAL says, hey, there's an encrypted block device. Pushes that like signal out on DBus. You have like your volume manager running in the desktop session that says, oh, there's an encrypted like block device. I'm gonna put up a dialogue and like trouble the poor user and say, would you like to unlock it? So it gets the passphrase, passes on the passphrase into HAL. HAL calls crypt setup, sets up the device. The kernel does its thing, and it says, oh, here's a new like block device, which is the clear text representation. So HAL says, oh, there's a new block device. And this block device actually is the clear text representation of your encrypted block device and passed on to the desktop session. Desktop session mounts it, so it goes all the way to the kernel, and it's mounted somewhere, and finally you get your icon. That's pretty complicated. That's the way it works. I'm sorry. Yeah, it's. I'm a big fan of keeping things simple. Yeah, from the user's perspective, it is pretty simple. Yeah. Yeah.
It's big, but it's elegant.
Yeah. Thanks. Oh, yeah, sorry about that diagram. But I have a much worse diagram. So, yeah, this is an example of, this is what we ship in Fedora CoreSX, basically, as the default desktop. So we have all these different policy daemons running up here. That reach your preferences from dconf. So the preferences are per user. Different users can have different preferences, and that's all the good stuff in dconf. You can lock down stuff and all that stuff. And these different processes, and there's a lot of them, they run, most of them are daemons, and they react to events from the system. I mean, this is not only HAL. I mean, HAL is just doing tiny bits. This network manager, Avahi. And the GNOME VFS daemon, for instance, uses both HAL to get the information about your storage devices and what icons to draw,
like it's a night for our lights. Oh. Sorry about that. I just scrolled it. It's fine. No, it's fine. So that way I can point less. So for instance, the GNOME VFS daemon gets information from Hal about the different drives you have. It gets information from Avahi about the different remote shares. And if there's like a third source of information, we can add that. And so it's kind of the way it looks. So the interesting thing about this is that all these bits, the kernel, Hal, Avahi, they only provide mechanism. They don't do anything. Like, they don't take any policy decisions and say, I'm going to mount your disk right here. That all comes from the desktop session, which is important because if the user wants to change the setting, he can change it in the UI. If one of these bits started an enforcing policy, where would they get their settings from? I mean, we've seen that already. It's like /etc somewhere. You go in, you edit a text file, and that's a dangerous road. So it's pretty important to keep the separation between policy and mechanism in mind. So the different design principles behind all this is like least privilege. It needs to be desktop and OS agnostic. And we want to like make sure that Dave Jones don't like kill us, so we don't want to poll or have useless wake-ups. If we can avoid it, I mean, sometimes you can't, and I get a lot of flames for all this. Like, Hal decides to poll all your drives with removable storage, because we have to. That's the only way we can, like, we can get an event if you insert media. So it means that every 2 seconds some process wakes up and, like, opens the device file. That causes a lot of, like, it burns battery. But if anyone got a better idea, I'm open for suggestions. Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, you can change it in Hal. You can write an XML file and put it somewhere. Maybe we shouldn't do it if no user is logged in, for instance. But I'll talk a bit more about that. But it's definitely something to keep in mind. It really, I mean, I was talking in the beginning about the different kind of users we have, and I mean, home users expect stuff to be auto-mounted when they put it in, but. Sorry? Yeah. So least privilege, I mean, the user session runs unprivileged, but mounting storage devices, connecting to networks, all this, as I showed earlier, it requires super user privileges. But really, you want your desktop app to run unprivileged. You'd never want to run it as like root. I mean, that's really, really, really bad. It's kind of a rant. Fine. So, a modern X11 application. I mean, either it uses Qt, it uses GTK, or some other huge toolkit with like millions of lines of code, image loaders. And there's just a lot of code that you really don't want to run with super user privileges. Because there can be buffer overflows in image loaders. And I mean, the GTK team, they're like, we don't support set UID because it's crazy to run all this code as root. You really don't want to do that. It also breaks accessibility. I mean, if you're running like using sudo or console helper, what the different distros ship, bingo, your application is no longer accessible. I mean, you can't use a screen reader, you can't use all your assistive technologies, and it's interesting for vendors because in the Americans with Disabilities Act, there's a section called 508, which basically says all computer systems purchased by the government needs to be accessible, and this is what this means. This is getting refreshed pretty soon, so there'll be more and more requirements. So your desktop needs to be accessible if you want to sell at least to US government and other governments. But we also, that's my personal opinion, and I think a lot of people share it. I mean, we have a moral obligation to make this work for impaired users. We cannot just say, oh, we don't care if this application is accessible or not. So can anyone tell me what's wrong with this picture? So this is an application running as UID 0. It's not very easy, so I'm just going to say it. You can see the file selector. And normally the file selector shows your username. But you're running as root, so it reads all your different settings from root. And that's not nice, I'd say. That's a side effect of saying, oh, we need to read files only accessible by the root user. We'll just run the entire UI as UID 0. Instead of saying, OK, we need to split this up into two different bits, like a privileged bit and an unprivileged bit, and then use some IPC to make the two bits talk to each other. I'm repeating myself, but I try not to rant when giving talks, so this is going to be my only rant. Just don't do it. Just say no. So interestingly enough, HAL does not suffer from this problem because we're using dbus and we have the separation between policy and mechanism and IPC in between it. That creates another problem. So basically, you can't let anyone call into HAL and mount devices, especially not for big network servers where you log in. So vendors restrict this by restricting only applications running at the system console or by group membership. So if you log in to Red Hat system over the network, you can't access HAL, you can't mount devices, you can't connect to network manager, which is by design. I mean, you really don't want to do that. It's not a problem that's specific to HAL, restricting privileges. And it's basically all or nothing. Either you're at the console, or you're a member of the ProcDev group, and you can do everything. If you're not, you can't do anything. So there needs to be a finer separation. So all or nothing is bad. The different privilege operations, this is not at all specific to HAL. It's like you want to partition disks. You want to install or upgrade software. You want to create an account for your girlfriend. You want to set the time zone. I mean, I have to put in the root password to set the time zone. That's on my laptop. That's a bit crazy. So you could also argue that if you want to upgrade your software and all the packages assigned, I mean, why should you need to be the super user? Even in a lockdown environment with a system administrator, you shouldn't really need to do that if you're on the road. So what would the requirements be? That's like smells like a waterfall software development model. But I mean, what would we need to make this work? We definitely want it to be vendor agnostic, so Fedora, Ubuntu, Solaris is all doing the same. So we want a unified file format for like describing who can do what and when, who should be able to upgrade software. And if you don't have the privileges, maybe you can put in your password to like at least say, this request is coming from a human being, not from some malware running. So this is a very ugly, ugly diagram. This is one like proposal for how to do it. So basically, you want to mount, yeah. I'll go through this very quickly. You can look at the PDF after. So you want to mount a storage device. HAL says, oops, you don't have the privilege. So you call into something called PolicyKit, perhaps, that says, OK, I really want to mount this. And this request is coming from me, I put in my password. It says, okay, I grant you that privilege, you can mount it again. So that's number 8. And HAL says, okay, you actually have this privilege, I allow you to mount it. So I haven't implemented all this because I think it's a bit too complex, but I'm not really sure how to deal with the problem. This is just one proposal. You guys are way too nice. You need to flame me a bit more. I don't have a lot of time left. I have a few more slides. So policy and mechanism, that's a bit about you want to run your policy daemons in the desktop session, not in the system session, so you can read settings. Some people wrote a power manager that ran in the system session. It was grabbing the process list to see, is mPlayer running? Okay, mPlayer is running, so I'm not going to suspend. I mean, that is not the way we want like our software stack to work. We want mPlayer to connect to the power management daemon and say, hey, please don't like suspend the computer or blank the screen because I'm playing a movie. So you want to run it in the desktop session, basically. And that's what I've been arguing. So you can have the clear separation. You can read all your preferences from whatever system you use. So HAL was written on Linux, and it's a tiny interface for like just supporting the different operations that the desktop needs. So it's very much driven by desktop developers in that sense. We don't need a lot of stuff, so we just can implement this, and also want the kernel developers to be able to change the kernel internals. I mean, if you look at SysFS, it's basically kernel internals exported. And I mean, if you change something in the kernel, you will need to change things in SysFS. Things will change, and I don't think it should, that the kernel developers should like be forced to keep that interface stable. So Artem from Sun Microsystem actually wrote an implementation of HAL on Solaris, and it's exactly the same interface. So all the policy managers we have in GNOME and in KDE, they run unmodified. Well, you have to compile it for Solaris with the whole tool chain, but there's no source code changes. So that's pretty awesome. And the same for FreeBSD. Joe Marcus Clark did that work. HAL is not a lot of code. It's kind of, I think it's 10,000 lines of code for the Linux backend. And the interface is so simple, so it's feasible to change. And I mean, all these screenshots are from GNOME, but you can get the same in KDE, XFCE, and other desktops. So HAL is a mechanism, so you could just say, we're going to use the kernel instead, but there's also, you have to do access control, you have to do other things. I don't have a lot of time, so I'm going to skip most of this. Is Linux becoming a microkernel? I don't know, it kind of looks like it. I mean, there's a bunch of like user space daemons you have running that they don't do a lot of stuff but provide mechanism. There's like UDEV for maintaining the device, there's the dbus HAL network manager. There's a bunch of daemons. So, yeah, that's the Linux daemons. I like them a lot. There's four. Actually, the latest one is SA Linux Troubleshooter D. It's actually kind of awesome. If SA Linux decides to like deny something, that daemon will emit a signal, and you have a small desktop widget that says ABC denial. This is what went wrong. This is how you can fix it. That's pretty awesome, but yeah. So there's also the Bluetooth daemons, and they basically only provide a mechanism. They enforce a little bit of policy, so sometimes you have to go in and edit files. That's kind of a detour. So future work is like the privilege stuff. I'm not really sure how to do it. I'd love to talk to people about how we can solve the all or nothing problem. There's a thing called Policy Kit that John William McCann wrote that makes it easy to track user sessions and seeds. So if you have fast user switching, you have two sessions going on at the same console. And each of them, you have GPM running, and each of them, it wants to enforce policy. And I mean, that needs to be fixed, because if your inactive session like is idle, and it is because it's inactive, then GNOME Power Manager will say, oh, we're idle. I'll better suspend your system. And then it's kind of screwing the active session. So the base system, kernel, UDEV, HAL, all that stuff, needs to like say, oh, this is a call from an inactive desktop session, so I'll just deny service instead of suspending the system. It also wants to address like multi-seed. So thus, you have another monitor and keyboard attached to the same system. And you're also running a, this guy's running KE, so he's running KPowerSave. And that also decides to suspend the system with FeeCidle. So there's some sort of coordination needed. Might also do like future stuff, remote seats, Sunray style. Also want to make sure that the devices, you can only use the devices at your own seat. Other things we've been doing, optimization. That's triggered both by Dave Jones' talk about why user space sucks, because we did. We suck a lot less now. I mean, memory consumption in hell is down to a reasonable level. Startup is down to a reasonable level. It's also triggered a lot by Nokia. They did a lot of really good work. And I did a bit of work for OLPC. So DBus, it's out, it's stable, start using it. DBus activation means that we can start list services at startup and only start software when we actually need it. One like Farfetch example, but this is gonna require a lot of work, is like the Cubs printing daemon. I mean, it runs all the time. Perhaps it should only run when it's like providing service to me when I'm printing a document. So that's something to look into. What else? What have I learned these 2 or 3 years? It's a lot of work. It's just really hard to figure out how to like put all these features that I showed in the beginning, the different screenshots. The architecture is kind of important, I think. I mean, hell was kind of broken in that it just took up a lot of memory, it did a lot of useless stuff. We fixed most of that, we fixed implementation. It's easy to replace an implementation, it's much harder to replace this whole crazy architecture I was showing earlier. I mean, doing this work, it's like, I deal with GNOME people, I deal with kernel people, I deal with a lot of distro people, and I mean, it works out pretty well, but there are different communities, and there's a lot of different roles I need to take in that respect, dealing with different communities. So that's basically it. I think I did it on time. Any questions? David?
How long DBus will survive a restart?
Oh, so the question was, can DBus survive a restart? I think if you write a nice patch, Havel will take it.
Do you see any overlap between what you just described and Upstart, like in terms of starting things only when they are needed, and could there be any communication happening so that, you know, that would actually be catered for, such as in your example of starting Cubs and also shutting it down again after it's been used?
Yeah, so the question was, what's the overlap with Upstart on this? And that's an interesting question. Did exchange a few mails with Scott on both the DBus and Upstart lists about that. And I'm not really sure. I mean, there's a lot of different use cases. There might be a bit of overlap in so far that Upstart also has a bit of IPC. So it overlaps with DBus in that regard. But I mean, Scott is here, and we mailed before the conference that we should talk about this, and we will. So anyone interested in that should find Scott and myself.
David, does HAL expose the DMI information?
So the question was, does HAL expose the DMI information? Yeah, it does. SMBIOS, I think there's, I can probably, probably won't take too long. Yeah, there's no display in my laptop, so I have to turn around. Yeah, there's SMBIOS, different stuff. So this is the, from SMBIOS, there's also a more abstract namespace called system product and system vendor, so we also pull in information from Apple computers, basically, because they don't have SMBIOS. Yeah, it's screen scraping DMI decode.
You mentioned like there's some nice changes in head. Is there going to be a new release soon to pick those up?
Yeah, there will be a new release soon, when I'm not too lazy. I mean, too busy with other stuff. but yeah, very soon. Any other questions?
I think that's pretty much it. It's time for everyone to go to lunch. So if you'd like to join me in thanking David for that talk.
Thank you.
Here's some LCA schooner glasses for you to enjoy some beverages out of later.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, so that's the end of this talk. Thank you.